Good afternoon. I call this meeting of the Human Services Policy Committee to order. Members, please take your seats. I note that we have 2, 4, 6. We don't quite have quorum, so at some point we will have quorum and we'll come back to the minutes. But in the meantime, the first bills that we're going to be talking about are the triple X bills that we know are going to be coming our way. And House File 4X, let's try that one. What we can do is we can start hearing those bills because they don't require any action. Oh, and now, because of my talk, we now have quorum. So what I will do is, Representative Keel was wondering if you'd like to move the minutes from January 30th.
Mr. Chair, I would be happy to move the minutes from January 30th.
Awesome, thank you. Representative Keel moves minutes from January 30th, 2023. Any questions or amendments? Hearing none, all those in favor of the motion to approve the minutes from January 30th, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Amendments from January 30th are approved. We have four bills that we're going to be talking about today. Two of them will have no action, two will have action. The first two that we'll be dealing with are for informational hearings, and this will have a hearing on a presentation from DHS. And the first one that we are going to be doing is marked 23-00202, and this will eventually be carried by Representative Finke, from my understanding. And we have Director Carrie Briones, I hope I'm saying that right, here to talk to us about the bill. So at this point, I will turn it over to you. If you'd like to introduce yourself and begin the presentation, please.
For the record, my name is Carrie Briones. I'm the Legislative Director for Direct Care and Treatment at the Department of Human Services. And I'll give you a little bit of information about this bill. It is really a technical cleanup of the PA-APRN bill that passed last session. The language that passed, the statute was amended to allow an APRN certified in mental health and licensed in a bordering state to act as a court examiner for a Minnesota resident admitted to a facility in the bordering state. Previously, this section used the term examiner rather than court examiner. By inclusion of the term court examiner in this part of statute, it creates a conflict with the definition of court examiner in the Civil Commitment Act, which governs court-ordered mental health treatment. In the Civil Commitment Act, the terms court examiner and examiner have different meanings, functions, qualifications, and duties. A court examiner is appointed to serve the court and must be a physician or licensed psychologist with a doctoral degree in psychology. An examiner is not appointed to serve the court and does not have the same professional or degree requirement. An examiner may have one of several professions, maybe a licensed physician, a mental health professional, licensed physician assistant, or an APRN practicing in a hospital ER, provided that the hospital has a process for credentialing and recredentialing any APRN acting as an examiner in the emergency room. In addition, an examiner must be knowledgeable, trained, and actively participating in the diagnosis and assessment of the treatment of the alleged impairment. In addition to these differing qualifications, both have very different functions and duties. Only court examiners may conduct competency assessments, perform commitment examinations, and reports under the Civil Commitment Act. And they may also perform examinations and reports for neuroleptic medications. Examiners may initiate emergency holds. Court examiners cannot. So in order to resolve this conflict and retain the intent of the language that passed last session, the changes in that section of statute are designed to allow individuals that are licensed in the bordering state to act in either or both role as long as they meet the qualifications for the sections under statute. And that's all I have. I stand for questions if you have any.
Okay. Reference to see if anybody has any questions. Not seeing any. Thank you so much. This will be a bill that will be coming back to us soon in the future, hopefully, and looks like one that will be pretty quick and understandable. So thank you. Next on the agenda, give me a second as I get to my notes here. We will then move on to the next bill that we have, that is a XXX bill. It's marked 23-00192. This will eventually be carried by Vice Chair Frederick. And we have Director Nicole Stockert, who will go over the bill with us. If you'd like to introduce yourself, who you're with, and begin your presentation, please.
Thank you so much, Mr. Chair. Nicole Stockert with the Department of Human Services. And I just want to start by thanking the committee for taking the time to hear this bill ahead of time. It's just really important for us to make sure that committee members understand what's in these bills and they have a chance to ask any questions about it. So I'm grateful for this opportunity. This bill is, as you can see, it's a 2300192. It has two parts, and both of them support the department's work in our obligations for the Assisted Living Report Card Project. This first provision allows the department to request aggregate facility level wide data. Ultimately, this just helps us better inform about who's being served in these assisted living settings across the state. And for newer members, just to kind of give you a brief background on the Assisted Living Facility Report Card, this was something that the 2019 legislature passed. And the purpose was for the department to develop an Assisted Living Report Card website. It's somewhat akin to the Nursing Facility Report Card website that we already have as a resource in the state, if members are familiar with that. DHS is currently conducting resident quality of life and family satisfaction surveys statewide for assisted living facilities that have the capacity to serve 20 or more residents. In our current resident survey, we do gather some demographic information from the residents at that time of survey. But what we're finding is that without facility-level demographic information, we really don't know whether the residents that are responded to the survey are representative of the population of that facility. The second provision makes changes to ensure participation in these really important resident quality of life and family satisfaction surveys. So, like I was mentioning earlier, this information is necessary for the state to understand not only who we are reaching, but also who we are not reaching. In these surveys, I mentioned DHS administers the Nursing Home Facility Report Card website. So this provision aligns with those participation requirements ultimately to ensure a robust and high quality report card for the public. So just to close, the provisions in this bill will ultimately make sure that consumers across the state will have the best information they need if they ever have a future need for assisted living services, and that they are able to make the best choice possible for these needs in that circumstances. In addition to improving statewide data to inform analysis with respect to equity in our assisted living settings. And with that, I'm happy to take any questions.
Okay, Chair Noor.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a quick question. Did I hear this will be for 20 residents and above? Or is it going to cover every resident in assisted living?
I'm sorry. Director Stockert. I'm sorry, it was me.
Thank you, Chair Fisher. Chair Noor, thank you for the question. Right now, you know, just given the sheer number of assisted living facilities that we have in our state, we're sort of starting with, larger facilities, those that are serving 20 residents or more. So we're not, hitting every single assisted living facility quite yet with this survey work. But it's, you know, the ones that we are surveying, we want to make sure that we're gathering complete information.
Chair Noor.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Director Stockett. I think the question that comes to mind is, if you live in a small setting, because we don't have the same protections as a nursing home, you know, those metrics and many other things that we do on the dashboard for the nursing home, it's also tied to their pay and so many other things. What's the incentive of doing this, and what metrics are we collecting to make sure that we can provide that information to patients and their families, and so they can make an informed decision?
Director Stockert.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you for the question, Chair Noor. As far as I do know that part of the 2019 legislation was not only for DHS to create this assisted living report card website. That kind of happened at the same time as that the state was going to, or did enact the assisted living law change from 2019. And so this is, you know, a way, of course, to sort of, for the public to have a very good idea about what sort of services are being offered in these settings. I also part of that time, the department was directed to, you know, come up with some measures. I'm unsure, though, about what those measures are, so I couldn't tell you exactly what's going into the survey right now. I do have somebody here that could help with that question, or I could follow up later, however you prefer.
I'll defer to Chair Noor. Would you like additional information now, or?
Oh, we can wait for that.
Okay.
Mr. Chair, appreciate it.
All right. Very good. So next time this bill comes up will probably be an issue that we want to make sure is addressed. Chair Noor, any further questions that you have?
Mr. Chair, I'm still concerned because we're sending individuals to smaller settings, you know, which I think the moratorium is, we don't do any more single family with less than four residents. Now it's everybody included in assisted living licensure. If we don't provide that comprehensive information, and if the intent is to provide informed decision-making process for patients, I think that will, and also their families, that will also exclude a significant number of settings. And hopefully we can get the data, how many are in different settings level, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Thank you, Chair Noor. Appreciate it. It's good for us to keep that in mind. Other questions or comments? I would have one question, Director Stockard, and that's when you were talking about the survey piece. You said this is going to be very similar to the survey that is used on the nursing, the report card used on the nursing homes. So when I see the added language in here about being able to ask for following demographic information, is that then pretty similar to what is done or the same as what is done on the nursing home report card? Director Stockard.
Chair Fisher, thank you for the question. I would say yes, and argue that the nursing home has a much more robust data collection because not only we have minimum data set data, which is a standard assessment tool for nursing homes that collects quite a bit of information, and so we're just sort of trying to catch up for these assisted living settings, and this is just a start.
Okay, that's what I just want to make sure, you know, where it was. So this is not anything beyond what they're doing. It's actually less than what they're doing on their report card then.
So absolutely.
Thank you. Thank you for that clarification. Appreciate it. Any further questions? Hearing none, thank you so much for being here before the committee. Appreciate it. And with that, we're moving along a little quicker than I thought here. And I'm taking a look to see if Representative Herr is in the... Representative Joachim, I believe, is next. I'm seeing if she is in the room yet, and I'm not seeing her. And I am not seeing, and I'm not seeing Representative Herr. So we're gonna take a brief recess here until the next author shows up, and then we'll start with the bills at that point. So we are in recess at my call.
Good. This will probably be on the I'm just passing it out on the back. Most of this goes to the Veterans Affairs Committee, but on the back, it's one item. But there's one item on the back that pertains to today's hearing, so it's here instead of there. And so I know it's homeless in general, but we're here because of homeless veterans. So that's why I wanted. I wanted you guys to see that all these organizations.
If I can call us back to order here, and have the members take their seats, please. I appreciate Representative Joachim changing your schedule to get in a little bit earlier here. Thank you so much. We moved a lot quicker than we thought on the first bills. So
that's always good.
Joachim, welcome to the committee. So what I'm going to do is make sure I'm at the right spot here. Because you're not a member of the committee, I will make sure to move House File 905 to be placed on the general register. Welcome to the committee, Representative Joachim. If you'd like to begin your testimony presenting the bill, and I understand we have a couple of testifiers. So what we'll do is hear from you, we'll take the testifiers, and then we'll go to questions from the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, members, for hearing House File 905 today. We've all witnessed the growing stress that our young adults face today, and have heard testimony from many of our communities about the need for mental health support in our schools. While the stress our students face existed before COVID and will exist well after, the global pandemic has shown a harsh light on the lack of support and safety net for the students that are struggling. This bill is a small step that we can take to give our students the tools they need to access mental health supports before things become dire. In current law, a 16 and 17-year-old is allowed to check themselves into an inpatient facility of their own accord, but cannot access help of a mental health professional in outpatient setting without parental permission first. I first learned of this odd discrepancy when I had coffee with Ms. Liv Steen, an engaged student from Hopkins High School that was on the Minnesota Youth Council and has since graduated. Ms. Steen could not be here today, but I do have a few students that could attend and would like to share their experiences as well as those of their classmates. With this bill, it is our hope to allow young adults to get the help they need before requiring a hospital stay. Delaying urgent care can be so costly in many ways. Sometimes these delays can be as simple as a language barrier or time constraints for a parent or a student, or it may be the lack of knowledge of resources available. Whatever the case may be, we want our young adults to get needed help without the costly delay. Members, you should have two letters of support in front of you on this bill. They're from NAMI and the Minnesota School Psychologists Association. I would now like to turn to the testimony from the voices that matter the most in this whole discussion, and that's those of our students.
Thank you, Representative Joachim. First testifier I have is Sage Hartman. If you'd like to come forward, introduce yourself to the committee, appreciate you taking time to be here. Come join Representative Joachim at the table.
Thank you.
and take your time. Take a deep breath. It's always a little nerve-wracking when I present, and I still get nervous when I come to the up to the testifier's table there. So please, yep, there you go. Get adjusted, get comfortable. And thank you for taking the time to be here today. Welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself and begin your testimony.
I would like to thank the chair and committee members today for hearing House File 905. My name is Sage Hartman, and I'm the Mental Health and Wellbeing Chair for the Minnesota Youth Council. I reside in Plymouth, Minnesota, and in the Congressional District 3 Chair. Youth around the world are affected by mental health struggles. Today, I'm going to be focusing on minors aged 16 to 18 in Minnesota. I'm going to start off by sharing my personal experience with mental health. I'm 16 years old and have struggled with my mental health for the last couple of years. About a year ago, I started attending therapy weekly. Therapy has allowed me to express how I'm feeling to a professional and get tailored advice to fit my situation, therefore positively affecting my mental state. Mental health is very stigmatized, and due to that, admitting that you need help takes vulnerability and courage. In the case that a legal guardian turns down the idea of a minor receiving appropriate mental health services, the individual will have to struggle without support. This process reinforces that stigmatization of mental health. Passing this bill is one less barrier for youth to go through in order to receive the mental health services they need. Currently, a lot of my friends are mentally struggling, most of which are not seeing a therapist or getting any sort of treatment for their mental health. For some of my friends, the reason why they haven't gotten any form of treatment is because of restricted access. More specifically, as of right now, it's a lot more common for people who have good relationships with their parents to access mental health support. If 16-year-olds could consent to non-residential mental health services, it would allow for people with fractured relationships with their parents or guardians to still access the help they desire. Passing this bill would therefore increase opportunities for those who are struggling and allow for them to seek help. In order to help the youth of today, the legislator needs to stand with the youth of today. And that's why I'm urging you to support House File 905. Thank you for your time.
You're welcome. Thank you, Sage, for coming up forward and sharing your story with us. I'm so glad that you're able to get these services that you need and help break down the stigmas out there. Thank you for that. Next, we will go to Samia Osman. If you'd like to come forward, introduce yourself.
I do not see Samia here. She may have, I don't know, she didn't text me. I don't know if there was struggles getting here or not, but.
Well, what we can do then is I will call if there's anyone else in the public who would like to offer any testimony at this point in time. Okay, hearing none, what we'll do is we'll go to member discussion and questions. If Samia does show up before we finish with the bill, we'll be open to having her provide her testimony at that point. And before we before I start, I know I've got Representative Frederick with a question. Before I start with that, I will start with a quick question to Representative Joachim. I know we heard this in the Behavioral Health Division over the last 2 years. Have there been any major changes from when we heard it pass it out of that division?
Mr. Chair, no, there hasn't.
Awesome. Thank you so much for that. Representative Frederick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Joachim, for bringing the bill forward. As I've said many times, stories change the world, so I also want to thank Ms. Hartman for being willing to come here today and share her story as well. I remember when this bill was presented in 2021, and I've talked about it several times in my district since then, and people are shocked that this isn't a thing that already exists. So thank you again for bringing it forward. For those that were not with us 2 years ago when we heard this bill, we heard story after story of kids coming before the committee talking about how they can't access mental health services for various reasons. Those reasons ranged from parents that didn't believe that mental health was a thing, and so they didn't allow their children to access mental health services. We heard stories about parents that didn't allow their kids to access mental health services because they were thought it brought shame to the family, and so they didn't allow it. But some of the hardest stories that we heard was from the people who couldn't be here that day, and their friends had to tell a story about how people they played on the playground with had committed suicide. This bill can save lives, so thank you for bringing it forward, and I look forward to supporting the bill.
Thank you, Vice Chair Frederick. Next, Representative Finke.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you, Representative Joachim, for your bill. I just wanted to echo, I wanted to be on the record echoing the importance of this bill and the importance of providing mental health support to people who need that support and recognizing that barriers to that support often live in the same house as you do. So this is incredibly important work for my community, but for all young people. And I'm just really grateful that we have it in front of us today.
Thank you, Representative Finke. And then seeing no other questions, I will say once again, thank you, Representative Joachim, for bringing this forward. I've seen in the homeless youth world where we've had youth who've been between 16 and 18, and even though they're homeless, their parents still don't allow them to get the services they need when they've suffered through trauma. So thank you for bringing this forward. Any closing comments?
Yes, I just want to thank you all for the questions, and Representative Frederick, that was a tough hearing. Luckily, we were able to have it on Zoom at that time, so we had a lot more voices at the table. And it's really hard for kiddos that to express that concern, especially if they're suffering from anxiety, to come down here can be really, really hard. But they were also echoing the voices of their friends. And a lot of the times it is that cultural barrier. One of the students talked about just that generational barrier because she was the youngest in the family and her parents were a little bit older. And then, frankly, just as a parent myself, sometimes it's really hard to acknowledge that your kids need help and that you can't provide the help that they need. So this is in no way saying that parents aren't doing their job. It's just saying that we want to help parents with their job, make sure our students are supported. And it just makes sense. This bill would go a long way to get the help students need long before requiring them for a hospital stay. Delaying urgent care can be costly in so many ways, but it's especially troublesome for our young adults. And we're also spending some money in school-linked mental health in our schools. Students can access that once. They can access that once without then getting parental support. And the School Psychology Association, this bill came up so fast, the School Psychology Association supports it, but the Psychological Association of Minnesota had in the past too and do still, but they couldn't get a letter in time. And one of the things they told me is in standard practice, the way they're trained, you do bring the parent in right away as soon as that patient is stable enough to have that conversation. So it's not like they're trying to axe the parents out of the equation at all. They just want to get that immediate help for the students till they then can bring into that therapeutic setting and make sure the whole family's there to work through it together. So this is just a bill that is a small step that we can do to give our students the tools that they need to access the mental health supports before things become much more dire. And thank you so much for hearing the bill.
You're welcome. Thank you, Representative Joachim. I renew my motion to refer House File 905 to be placed on the general register. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. The motion prevails, and House File 905 will be placed on the general register. Thank you so much, Representative Joachim.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Our final item of business will be House File 732 from Representative Herr. Because Representative Herr is not a member of the committee, I will move House File 732 to be referred to the Health and Policy Finance Committee. I also understand that we have an author's amendment for this bill. I will move the A1 author's amendment to House File 732. Yep. Yep, thank you. Representative Herr, could you please explain the A1 amendment before we vote on it? And this is to get it, the bill in the shape that the author would like.
Thank you, Chair Fisher and committee. So the author's amendment, I know it looks like a lot, but it actually is not. The amendment incorporates input from DHS. It just caps unearned income payments at 30% for not just people receiving SSI, RSDI, and veterans benefit, but for anyone who receives other types of unearned income like child support or unemployment insurance and tribal payments, just to name a few. But I think that this makes the bill more inclusive and thoughtful towards individuals who have different types of earned income. And then if you notice, it's just the way the bill shifts, then some of the language from the actual bill is just reincorporated into the amendment. So it may look like a lot, but it actually does really narrow in what it does.
Okay, very good. Are there any questions on the A1 amendment? Hearing none, all in favor of the A1 amendment signify saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, say nay. The A1 amendment is adopted. At this point in time, Representative Herr, if you'd like to introduce your bill. I also understand we have a few testifiers, so we'll take your testimony, go to the testifiers, and then we'll go to questions from the committee. Representative Herr.
Thank you, Chair Fisher, and thank you, committee members, for hearing House File 732. I'm not sure how many of you are familiar with this program, but this is a statewide housing support program that improves housing and homelessness outcomes while putting money back in the pockets of the lowest-income Minnesotans. Housing support serves seniors and adults with disabilities who have low incomes. More than half the recipients are people of color or indigenous people, and more than half receive a form of supplemental security income. This is a really unique program because it is statewide, but it provides permanent supporting housing program that pairs housing assistance with case management services. You might have remembered this bill has been in front of committee before, looking at expansion of other capacities, but in this one, we really are looking to address the fact that what we're requesting falls more in line with when we look at housing income requirements for some of our lowest income individuals. Right now, currently, an individual sometimes has to give up all of their income and only keep $121 for personal allowance, and that's just really small to pay all of the other expenses. And so we just want to make sure that we are looking at those levels. And before I turn it over to my testifiers here today, I do just want to note that in 2020 to 2021, this program moved 7,500 people out of homelessness across the state. This is a really good program. It's received bipartisan support and is supported by both sides of the aisle. And I hope that as you all listen to testifiers today, that you will also support this bill as well. Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee.
You're welcome. Thank you, Representative Herr. The first testifier I have is Lorna Schmidt. See, she's already at the table. If you'd like to go ahead and introduce yourself, who you're with, and start your testimony, please.
Thank you so much, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Lorna Schmidt, and I'm the Director of Public Policy and Advocacy with Catholic Charities Twin Cities. We're a regional leader of housing, emergency shelter, and direct services, supporting more than 20,000 youth, adults, and families each year. As Representative Herr said, this bill is all about housing support, improving housing and homelessness outcomes, and putting money back in the pockets of the lowest income Minnesotans. And we're really excited to work with her again this year to bring it back. Housing support is more than rent. Like Representative Herr said, it is a permanent supportive housing program that pairs housing assistance with case management services and basic necessities like food, bed and linens, and laundry. It operates in all corners of the state, helped move more than 7,500 individuals out of homelessness between 2020 and 2021, and can also help prevent homelessness. So why reform it? Right now, people enrolled in housing support pay a portion of their income each month towards their housing costs, but that's not the problem. The problem is the way the state treats unearned income when determining how much each individual must pay. Right now, the state can take all but $121 of an individual's unearned income each month to pay for housing support costs. This includes Supplemental Security Income, or SSI, Retirement, Survivors, and Disability Insurance, RSDI, Veterans Benefits, Tribal Per Capita Payments, and even Unemployment Insurance Income and Child Support. Especially for people receiving SSI, this can add up to as much as 90% of their monthly income, leaving them just $121 to pay for everything not covered by the program, like a phone, transportation, clothing, and any emergency expenses that might arise. As a result, there are individuals right now who are on the street or in shelter who are declining housing because and choosing to stay unsheltered because accepting it would mean losing virtually all control of their already limited finances. There are housing support tenants who, as leaseholders, are actually at risk of eviction because they can't afford to pay both their share of rent and their other monthly expenses. And there are people who want to transition off the program but can't because $121 isn't enough to save for a security deposit or first month's rent, much less anything else. What this bill does is make sure that individuals living in community settings aren't forced to pay more than 30% of their unearned income, including SSI and veterans benefits, toward their housing support costs. It does not change eligibility for the program. This bill is the product of conversations with individuals with lived experience of homelessness, our staff, shelter and housing providers, veterans and disability nonprofits, counties, and many others. It would help more individuals exit homelessness, it would help those with housing keep it, and it would help those working to transition off the program build the skills and savings to do so successfully. We ask for your support, and I'm happy to answer any questions you might have.
Thank you very much. Our next testifier is Tyra Thomas. If you'd like to come up to the testifier table, please. Have a seat, make yourself comfortable. thank you for taking the time to be here today. If you'd like to go ahead and introduce yourself, you may start your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm a part of Street Voices of Change, a group of people with lived experiences of homelessness who come together to identify issues important to us and work for change in community. Housing support reform is an issue we have identified as being very important to us and that we are working on to raise awareness and create the change. We as Street Voices of Change thank the authors of the bill to make important changes to the housing support program. Housing support, as the program is today, keeps people in homelessness or deters people from accessing housing because too much of a person's income is taken for housing. Additionally, no renter's credit is given. The program takes away our agency and ability to build savings to possibly purchase a car or maybe even a home of our own one day. This program is set up currently is not effective at ending homelessness or creating equity. And I'll footnote among black and brown indigenous bodies. We support this bill, House File 732, and thank you for your consideration of this bill. I have been in encampments, and so I echo Lorna. Post George Floyd, I saw a lot of my friends, people I grew up with in Powderhorn Park, who were saying the same thing. I don't want to go into this program. When I was in the program, I struggled with meeting with my son to go for ice cream, to go to a movie. My son committed suicide 5 years after he graduated college because I couldn't afford to go to it. Thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you, Ms. Thomas, for sharing with us, and condolences on the loss of your son. This is a perfect reason why we need to be addressing this bill and moving forward. Next testifier we have is, thank you so much for testifying. You may take your seat. Next we have Christy Jan Eigel. If you'd like to introduce yourself and who you're with, please.
Mr. Chair and members, my name is Dr. Christy Janigo, and I served in the North Dakota Army National Guard from 2000 to 2006. I was a sergeant and a squad leader with the 132nd Quartermaster Company. I'm the American Legion Department of Minnesota Legislative Chair. One of the most serious issues facing the military and veterans community is homelessness. We need to fund efforts to end veteran homelessness in Minnesota, and this will require significant investment and effort. We also need to look at our current policies and eliminate ways we're inadvertently perpetuating homelessness. We veterans do not like to ask for help. We will do almost whatever it takes to be self-reliant, strong. So a veteran asking for help by entering shelter or seeking housing supports, that represents an about face for that person, a first step to turning their life around. There are 331 veterans on the Homeless Veterans Registry experiencing homelessness in Minnesota. For too many veterans, the price of moving to permanent housing is giving up all but $121 a month, or they can choose to remain homeless. The state terms these federal benefits unearned income. This is not unearned income. This income in the form of VA benefits and pensions is very much earned. Ask just about any veteran in the U.S., and they'll tell you that compensation for injuries on behalf of their country is not unearned to them. I ask, are any of you here willing to sacrifice your hearing or one of your arms or perhaps deal with lifelong skin conditions or, God forbid, cancer from toxic exposure you experienced while serving in the Middle East? And if so, what price would you put on that? And how many of you would be willing to pay 90% of your income, no matter where you got it from, on your housing? Last year, the bill addressing this issue was HF 3568 and SF 3417, led by Catholic Charities. It had bipartisan support then, and so this bill, HF 732, must pass this year. Please let these veterans keep their federal income. This measure would provide one more tool in the toolbox to end veteran homelessness. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Thank you so much for your testimony. Thank you for your service to our country.
Thank you.
Next up, I have Christy Graham from the Department of Human Services. Welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself, who you're with, and start your testimony, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. For the record, my name is Christy Graham, and I'm with the Department of Human Services. First of all, thank you to Representative Herr for bringing forward this important bill. I also want to thank Catholic Charities and our community partners who've been working on this legislation for probably over a year now. And most importantly, really want to thank people who use housing support, people who are hoping to use the housing support program, Ms. Thomas, for example, for being our inspiration and really moving this legislation forward. So I'll keep my comments pretty brief today, but I do want to let you know that the department and the governor support this bill. This is a provision that's also carried in the governor's budget recommendations. We've heard a lot about the housing support program today, so I won't revisit what it is, but it's an important program for people who are people with disabilities, people who are older adults, as well as people who have behavioral health conditions. So people who are living with substance use disorders, people who have mental health issues. So it's a really critical program for all of those populations. And it is very unique. In fact, we get calls at the department pretty regularly from other states saying, can you help us emulate this program in our state? We want something like this. The housing support program supports people in their own apartments, which is the settings that we're talking about today, but it's also supporting people in settings like board and lodges, transitional housing programs. So it's really important funding stream, and we're so appreciative of the legislature's support for it over the years. And it's been around for, I think, over 30 years. I couldn't find the exact date, but it's been around for a long time. So it's a very solid program, but having been around for 30 years, it is time to take a look at some of the policies and really revisit, are these the right policies that are incentivizing and creating the outcomes that we want for people experiencing homelessness or housing instability? We certainly at the department want to make sure that people have the ability to save money, to become more economic self-sufficient on their own, and we want to make sure that people have the ability to move out of emergency shelters or off of the streets to be able to have their own home, which is a safer, healthier place for them. So, again, thank you so much, Representative Herr, and thank you to Catholic Charities and all the community partners. And we hope that you'll support this bill. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Director Graham. Is there anyone else from the public who'd like to testify on this bill? Seeing none, I would like to say once again, thank you to the testifiers, thank you to the veterans and your service to our, who are here in the service to our country. Most importantly, thank you to Ms. Tyra Thomas, who came to testify and share her story today. It was very helpful. Thank you so much. With that, I do have several people already on the list of the reps who would like to address the bill. We'll start with Representative Edelson, from there will be Representative Knorr, Hicks, and then Keel. Representative Edelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Herr. It's a great bill. I have a few questions on it. Mrs. Tyra Thompson, come on up. You did a great job testifying. You had said that there's no renter's credit that was given, and I guess with that, I want to talk about that, because actually I feel like this is clearly a program that has kept people in poverty, and really I definitely hear the importance, Director Graham, of it, but it's a policy that clearly has some problems, and so I guess if you could just talk about that, Ms. Thompson, and then Representative Herr, I'm wondering if there's a tweak that we can make to this, because I don't see that there's a renter's credit in here. Maybe I'm missing it, but.
Thank you.
Thomas, go ahead, please.
Thank you for the question, Chair Alderson. When I was in a GRH program, and I want to say there's great programs out there, mm-hmm. The one I particularly was in was not a really good program. But one thing I did learn in my trek about what was available to me, what was supposed to be supportive services, was not happening in that space, so I started asking important questions. And I thought about when I was raising my children that when I was paying rent, market rent, I would get a renter's credit. So I went to the heads of this particular, it was GRH then, I'm still getting used to saying housing support. And they told me I don't get that. So I asked them to prove it to me. So they gave me the CRP form, and it specifically says on there, GRH is not eligible for a renter's credit. Now, my understanding is some of that is because I was on general assistance, so it's already taxpaying dollars, so I cannot go recoup that money as far as my credit in the space of paying rent. That was the answer I received.
Representative Biddle.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And thank you, Ms. Thomas, for that. And then Representative Herr, if we could just maybe, I don't know if you have anything to say to that or if we could connect offline about it too, I think.
Representative Herr.
Thank you, Chair, and also Representative Edelson. That's a great question. I actually did put that note down as well, so I will actually explore that and get something to the committee afterwards if there are ways we can continue to make this bill better. I was also thinking about does this, if some, because somebody's consistently paying their rent, does it also give them a positive impact on their credit score? So it's making me think about a lot of different things as well. So I appreciate the questions.
And then, Mr. Chair, just one more other question.
Sure, Representative Edelson.
Just Representative Herr, the effective date is August of 2023, August 1st. Curious why it's not effective the date of passage, or if that was like a department negotiation. Curious about that.
Representative Herr.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you, Representative Elson. You know what? Maybe I can have the department or Lorna Schmidt. I'm open to it being any day, but I also know that, you know, I think we generally do like a July 1st or, you know, end of the summer type date, but I don't know if they have different answer to that question.
Looks like we have somebody who's willing to come up if you'd like to come up again. It's Lorna Schmidt, if you'd like to go ahead and provide your information you have.
Sure. Thank you, Chair Fisher and Representative Edelson. Thank you for the question. We would like it to go into effect as soon as possible. We know that with the way that the system is set up right now, the department needs some time to upgrade systems to make sure that the right calculations are happening. So we are happy to have more conversations on that. And we, and I think many of our partners, would be happy to support the earliest implementation possible.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I apologize. I appreciate you giving me such latitude here. I guess I would encourage this to be enacted earlier, and the department can figure that out now. Upon passage is what I would really recommend for this. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Edelson. Next, we have Chair Knorr.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Gali, for bringing this bill forward, and I think Representative Edelson, she wants to help us solve the issues of Maxis, which is the system that we're talking about. I wish we are more quick in terms of updating and upgrading the system so that we can start issuing the benefits as required. So I think there's some technical issues. Hopefully the fiscal note will reflect some of the changes that are needed to bring the program up to date. I don't want to speak for the department. They can do that on their own. Some of the question is how many participants are served through the formerly GRH, housing support program?
Lorna Schmidt.
Sure. Thank you, Chair and Representative. I'd be happy to follow up to get the most current numbers for you. We can work with the department to get that. Generally, I think the last numbers that I saw is that housing support as a whole, when we look at all settings, serves about just over 20,000 individuals. What we are talking about in this bill is focused on those community settings, those places where individuals do hold their own lease, and we know that more and more individuals are choosing those settings. So it's about a quarter of individuals that are in the community living settings that would be impacted by this bill, and then we'd have to do a further step to see of those how many are receiving unearned income like SSI or veterans benefits.
Chair Knorr.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Schmidt, how do we treat the GA benefits? Do we also do the same process for general assistance?
Lorna Schmidt.
Thank you, Chair Knorr and Representative Knorr. This at this point does not affect the GA assistance rates. We know that's another area that needs more discussion. We know that there are challenges as well. The greatest financial disincentives that we see at this point entering the program or transitioning off are in the space of the unearned income, like the SSI and the veterans benefits. So that's where we started, but we would be happy to have more conversation about those extra changes and how we can build upon this. Because we do say this is a critical reform, it's a necessary reform, but it's not going to solve everything. So there will be more work to do.
Chair Knorr.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, for giving me the time to ask. There are several questions, but We're planning to increase hopefully the GA benefits for individuals. It has been $203 for many, many years. And especially when we're even taking away because we're providing the housing support. I think this is a moment also to include the exclusion of the GA, if possible. I don't know the details. It has been a long time since I did the program. So I think there's a need to have that conversation. Likewise, I think the question that I have, Mr. Chair, is how do we do the deduction? Is it off the top of what they're paying, or do we, does the payee, for example, do that deduction? If an individual is paying out of their own pocket, how are they paying the difference?
Lorna Schmidt.
Thank you, Chair. I need just a moment to follow the question.
Okay, sir, go ahead.
So at this point, the goal would be to factor the 30% of unearned income after any applicable exclusions or disregards. The housing support payments, as I understand, are typically paid. Well, now I need to pause because I'm confusing myself. I would love to follow up with you. I don't want to misspeak in committee. I know generally the goal between provider and individual payments that may be happening, certainly making sure that the right amounts are paid and accurate. But yes, I will follow up and make sure that we get that answer to you.
And does anyone from DHS have that information or can they answer that at this point, seeing we have some folks out there? Director Graham.
Mr. Chair, members, and Chair Noor, I believe the general assistance, that the intent of this bill would be to not impact general assistance, and so we do have some additional technical assistance to make sure that they get to retain their full amount of general assistance and that isn't incorporated into this new formula.
Okay. Well, thank you so much.
Thank you. Chair Noor.
So to the question that I have is, how is that deduction, when somebody gets SSI or SDIGA, how is that incorporated in the housing support benefit that we issue? Is it the participant who pays two for the rent, or is it that they don't receive the funding?
Mr. Chair.
Director Graham.
Mr. Chair, Chair Noor, just to clarify, you're asking, you want to understand if the participant pays their rent or?
Chair Noor.
The difference, when we say that we will only allow certain amount to be credited as, the $121 personal allowance. So if an individual is receiving directly the SSI benefits or the earned income,
mm-hmm.
and how does that apply to the housing support program? The question is, they're paying for their rent, correct, mostly for this program? And so how is that applied?
Director Graham.
Mr. Chair, Chair Noor, I believe that's correct. They're paying for their rent. They're paying on their own. But Ms. Schmidt might want to add something.
Lorna Schmidt.
Sure. Thank you, Chair. It sunk in. I think I'm understanding the question now. Yes. So with housing support, because we said everyone who's on the program would pay a certain portion of their rent. So there is the state share, and then there's the client obligation. So the state share is going to be coming through to the housing support provider to help cover the cost of the rent and utilities, the case management, some of those other necessities. If individuals have income that would reduce that, then the individual would also be paying towards the cost of that rent. Does that make sense? So you could have payments coming from both the individual and the state, depending on a person's financial situation.
Chair Noor.
This is what I was trying to get to. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Schmidt, if the participant does not want to pay their share, and so they could be evicted, and what happens in that process? Because we want to make sure that we have a system in place to help the participant so they don't become homeless again.
Lorna Schmidt.
Yes, thank you, Chair. That's absolutely correct. Yes, individuals right now with such limited income are in those impossible decisions of, do I pay my portion of my housing support costs, or do I pay for extra food, transportation, or some of the simple joys, as Ms. Thomas was saying, of like having ice cream with your child. When those payments aren't made, however, it in some cases would be a violation of the housing support agreement. And so those individuals could be at risk for eviction because they are leaseholding tenants, again, in these community settings. Now, certainly housing support providers, because the goal is never eviction. We know that evictions make it more difficult to move into additional housing. It threatens to throw people back into the cycle of homelessness. So there are, I think, always conversations of trying to work with individuals to make sure that is not the case, but more needs to be done to better support the individuals who are in the programs and also make sure that the providers themselves are financially whole.
Okay, thank you. Chair Noor.
My final question, Mr. Chair.
Sure.
So the housing support is through an RFP program to the counties rather than just an application that an individual will submit. Is that correct?
Lorna Schmidt. Or,
okay. Thank you.
Schmidt, go ahead.
Thank you, Chair Fisher and Representative. Correct. So it's state funds that are administered through the county. So the county does the eligibility, and then the county would contract with housing support providers, such as Catholic Charities, to actually manage the program.
Chair Noor.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So to confirm, it's more of an RFP program rather than just anybody can, any entity can come and apply.
Lorna Schmidt.
Sure. Thank you, Chair. So yes, you, the program looks at making sure that the individual is eligible. So they would have to apply, but if they qualify, you know, it's a program where if you are eligible and you apply, you would receive the benefit. But it is also making sure that that individual is working with an eligible provider. So it is approved providers that are working with the county and the state to administer this.
Thank you. Chair Noor, anything else?
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay, certainly. Next, we have Representative Hicks, and then it'll be Representative Keel.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you, Representative Herr, for bringing this bill forward. This is a huge passion area for me. As a disability advocate, I worked with so many people who fought so hard to get their Social Security approved, whose applications took us 12 months, 18 months, 24 months, only to get their application and then realize that nothing changed in their life, because they were using GRH support. And so they continued to be stuck in this cycle because it didn't matter for what used to be GRH support. It didn't matter for them because even though they did what they were told, got the Social Security approved, they were working towards all of these independent steps, they were still stuck in this cycle of poverty because of the way that we calculated income. And this isn't the way we calculate income anywhere else. It's not how we calculate subsidized housing for children and families. It's not how we calculate subsidized housing without supports. And so moving to this model really fixes that inequity, and I'm so excited to see this moving forward. I'm so happy that we're making that move. And I also just want to say I think the additional services in housing supports has been fundamentally changing for folks. And so I do want to just thank you for your work and for the testifiers that were here today and all of the providers doing this work across the state, because it is so, so important for our communities and for stability. So just bottom of my heart, thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you.
Thank you, Representative Keel. Representative Hicks. Now we'll go to Representative Keel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I was going to ask Ms. Schmidt, when we're talking about the housing supports, what other help do you provide for your services that help those to navigate the challenges of avoiding homelessness and the other services that need to happen for them to be surviving?
Lorna Schmidt.
Sure. Thank you, Chair and Representative Keel. I guess what I would say is we have phenomenal staff who do every day above and beyond work to make sure that the people that we serve are receiving whatever help it may be that they need. So when we talk about some of the services, in its very basic form, it can be checking in to make sure that they have access to 3 healthy meals a day, that they have access to laundry, that they have access to cleaning supplies. But there are supplemental services that go along with housing support as well for individuals who may need that, and that could be working to do additional housing support navigation. It may be helping to coordinate transportation to medical appointments, maybe working with them on workforce challenges if they're working on applications. I have never heard our staff say no to anything. If anything, like I said, they are problem solvers, and they are doing everything they can because they know how important this is to the people that we serve.
Representative Keel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yes, I appreciate the tour of your facility and noticed that there was a lot of ability to connect whatever they needed at the time of their, you know, the homelessness or the stress or what's going on in their lives. And it seemed like there was a lot of availability to help turn things around. So thank you.
Are there any other comments or questions? Chair Noor.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. As we were listening to the conversation, I just wanted to also mention housing stabilization, which is another component of helping individuals stay in their homes. It's a Medicaid program, which is the next. I don't know if you wanted to touch on that, Ms. Graham, or anyone else.
Ms. Graham, go ahead.
Sure, Mr. Chair, Chair Noor. So, yes, our housing stabilization services program is a medical assistance benefit. There are kind of three parts to that service that can be provided, and I believe Catholic Charities and many housing providers, in addition to, you know, providing rental assistance through housing support and potentially supplemental services, are also using that housing stabilization service to make sure that we can draw down, you know, federal funds to support this work and helping people find housing and helping people maintain housing.
Chair Noor.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think one of the reasons that I'm mentioning this issue is I'm planning to introduce a bill. Hopefully I can get the technical assistance from the department using Medicaid to pay for the housing part of it rather than just the case management and everything else so that we can request that waiver from the federal government. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
You're welcome. Thank you, Chair Noor. Not seeing any other hands, I will offer Representative Herr the opportunity with her closing comments.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you, committee members, for the thoughtful conversation around this particular topic. I think that at the legislature, a lot of times we solve problems in silo. We say we want to fix housing, we want to fix education, we want to fix all the different areas in which we have committee. And I think what this committee is doing is really living at that space in which the intersection of people's lives and all the disparities that we may face, whether it is having good health outcomes for our seniors and our veterans or, you know, getting the supports that they need, that housing is key to that. And we know that housing sits at the center of the disparities, all these issues we face. And so I really appreciate this committee really looking at that. And housing is really something core to my own heart because I've seen how housing has worked in my own life and my parents' ability as immigrants to be able to work through health issues that now that they are seniors. And the fact that housing is also the way in which my family was able to build wealth was also a way for my family to educate six children to become engineers and people in the legislature. And, you know, and I think that housing is so critical. And I think sometimes when we're trying to fix some of these issues in society, we forget the importance of the intersection of how all of these issues fit together. So thank you so much for this committee and the work that you do here. I just wanted to lift up really quickly that we have a very large group of individuals who support this, and you all should have gotten letters in your packet. But we have 35 partners from across the state that have signed on to support this bill, including shelters, housing support providers, veterans, disability advocate organizations, counties, developers, organizations representing individuals with lived experiences, and just so much more. And so I really do appreciate this committee hearing this bill, and I do ask for your support of it. So thank you so much.
You're welcome. Thank you, Representative Herr. I renew my motion that House File 732, as amended, be referred to Health Policy and Finance. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed say nay. The motion prevails and House File 732 as amended will be referred to the Human Services Finance. Referred to the Health Policy and Finance Committee. So I want to thank everybody for being here today. Once again, I want to say thank you to the testifiers that we've had. Seeing no further business in front of the committee, our next hearing will be Monday, February 6th. We'll be hearing House File 339 that day. House File 716 and House File 813 are currently on the agenda. So we are adjourned.